And we are back with episode 606 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and yes, occasionally Disney does have to get its due, even around here.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and I guess the old saying, never give up, never surrender, is more truer than we thought.
That's right, and unfortunately that doesn't apply to Bronze Thumb because he is not here with us tonight, so he is apparently surrendering to reality. But in the meantime, we are going to try and hold down the fort, and that means that we've got some recent genre news that we're going to cover. We've got a whole week's worth of episodes that we can dig into. We've got a bit of feedback, and then who knows what we're going to get into after that. It's just going to be one of those interesting, pretty open weeks, actually. So let's see what happens. But first, Edmund, if you can give a disclaimer.
Absolutely. As far as the news, we will try to spoil you with lovely tidbits that you might not have heard, that we hope you will be happy to hear. And if we get into episodic discussion, we will spoil you silly with whatever we feel like talking about.
That's right. And we are going to go ahead and start with... this first item, which is some news out of NBC, apparently they have been the winners of a bidding war between four networks for a show called Time, which is, a time-traveling action-adventure drama. I don't know if they could throw in a few other words into that description, but described as Back to the Future meets Mission Impossible. Time is the brainchild of Sean Ryan of S.H.I.E.L.D. fame and... Eric Kripke of Supernatural fame. Let's not put Revolution anywhere near that, I guess. But we will, which is what I'm slightly worried about reading this. Just the fact that this is a one-hour show involving an unlikely trio traveling through time to battle unknown criminals in order to protect history as we know it.
Boy, so it's like that... Voyagers.
Yeah. Yeah,
there you go. I hope. Anyway.
Yeah, so apparently the... Kripke was looking to do a big, you know, time travel type of show. And I guess these guys supposedly are ready to get it all started and flesh out the characters and story in a few weeks. And who knows when the show is supposed to hit the air. But I guess, they're still working out what exactly this show that's now been announced is supposed to be. And I'm going to say this right now. This picture of Sean Ryan here in the article is terrifying.
Yes, it is.
it looks... Yeah.
I mean, this is one of those cases where, I mean, one of my immediate reactions is, yes, guys, you know, there's a little time travel show that's been trying to cling on by its fingernails. It would be awfully nice if somebody gave some support to, but anyway.
What are you going to do?
We will talk about Continuum more in a couple of weeks.
That's right. As it unfortunately rounds itself out. But that's it for the traditional networks. It was actually nice to get some news from them, but I guess we're going to be on a wait-and-see type of posture with Time. Gary, why don't you take it away with this news from cable networks?
Yes, and it's big news, at least as far as viewers go. The premiere of the new series, Fear the Walking Dead, has been announced that it's had the largest opening of any cable show in history. They had over 10 million people watching the first episode. They pretty much scored high in every sort of marketing demographic you could imagine. And a lot of people enjoyed what they did with it. They felt that while it made no pretenses of trying to be a Walking Dead clone or spinoff directly, it still managed to pique a lot of people's interest, and they found a lot of things that they thought had potential for further growth.
Yeah, I'm kind of amazed that it got the ratings that it did, though I guess perhaps we shouldn't have been that surprised, given the fact that this is, again, part of the, huge franchise for AMC that it has been. I'll be more interested to see what the ratings look like this coming week.
Yes.
As we get that news shortly after this episode goes to the air. So, yeah, because I'm sure a lot of people were there for the premiere. I'm curious to see how much of that stays intact for the next few episodes. Keeping in mind, there's only six total, I believe. So,
was it six or five?
It's a pretty small number, regardless.
I'm pretty sure it's six. It kind of stuck in my head that they gave it the same short order that they did the original show.
Yep. I think so. I think that it's meant to be very introductory this first season. Yeah. So
yes, it is. It is six episodes with a second season of 15.
So I'm a little worried that we're going to be in a situation where we're waiting for the actual show to start, in the second season. But again, I'll be curious to see how many people from the premiere show up for all six of these episodes. Edmund, I believe there's more news from cable networks here.
There is, and those of us who were eagerly anticipating the series finale of Mr. Robot this past week, unfortunately, we are all going to have to wait another week as USA Network pulled the episode, apparently because there is a scene in it which was of a similar nature to the shooting of the TV journalists and their interview subject in Virginia. Earlier this week, before the episode was supposed to air, so is one of those situations where I do wish I could have seen the episode, and there is part of me that wonders, in terms of a smaller show like this, if how much of this is actually necessary sometimes. But if they felt they needed to, out of respect, then I can certainly respect that.
Yeah, you gotta, things like this unfortunately have a tendency to overlap with the more intense shows that are out on the air, and this would be one of those examples. And as soon as I saw that there was some oddities going on with the scheduling, the first thought I had was, I bet that this is because of the news, and well, there you are. Unfortunately, that does happen. Also coming out of USA is the news that, sorry fans of Complications, it has been canceled after one season, and literally, the entire article here is, USA has canceled freshman drama series Complications.
There were complications on Complications, okay.
Yes.
Apparently.
However, yes. Those who like a complication-free life, you're about to get your wish. Sorry, it was just sitting there. I had to pick it up. All right, going over to Gary, I think that this is up your wheelhouse here, Online Alternative Networks, and this is interesting news.
Yeah, it is, and I wish we had a little bit more information than what I'm about to share, but I'll give you all that I have, not that it's much. Amazon Studios, in association with Paramount, has announced that they are developing a Galaxy Quest television series. Well, not television series, but I guess a series. I don't know. Web's not quite the right word anymore. direct isn't the right word anymore. I'll try and come up with an appropriate term and plug it as much as possible within the next few shows. However, regardless, they're going to have an online series. And the thing that makes this possibly a success is that the original movie writers are assigned on to write the pilot and perhaps go further with the series if it gets picked up. There's no word, if any of the original stars like Tim Allen or Sigourney Weaver will either cameo or reprise their roles in any way for the new series. So we'll have to keep a lookout. But it's just a sort of a preliminary. We're writing a pilot on it. I guess they want to start feeling out interest early.
It's a start. It sounds interesting to me. I mean, for the people who were originally involved in the show to be doing something with it is awfully interesting to me. I mean, it's this many years later anyway. But I know that we had kind of talked about this at one point previously, and I guess this is the next iteration along the path to whatever comes our way.
Well, I would like to point out, I was hoping there'd be a new Star Trek series, but this wasn't exactly what I was thinking.
yeah.
Anyway.
This is a point. Yes, this is a point.
Yeah, sorry. The powers that be, the Paramount, filed that one in the wrong box.
Yeah, apparently. Moving on then to movie news, and this is rather interesting news, Edmund.
Yes, on the Studio Ghibli front, one of their, I would say, more obscure but quite beloved offerings, Only Yesterday, overlooked somewhat because it was directed by Isao Takahata, not Miyazaki, who tended to be his movies tend to be more slice of life and sort of down to earth than some of Miyazaki's more flights of fancy, shall we say. Only Yesterday is going to get a run actually in North American theaters in 2016. They are going to do a whole new English voice cast with it, as they've been doing with most of these most of the Disney re-releases, and basically bringing it all out for the 25th anniversary. So I mean, yeah, this is a really wonderful and emotional film, and as I say, something that's not quite like some of the other Studio Ghibli fare that Disney has been bringing out over the last 10 years or so. So definitely worth worth a look if it's in your area.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we'll have to see whether or not it's in the area for us. It should be, at least nearby, I would think. Anyway, moving on then to some news that could be a surprise to a lot of people here, and that would be that The Hobbit, Battle of the Five Armies, Extended Edition, is apparently R-rated. Now, I know what you're thinking. You know,
they get dwarfs. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. It's supposed to be 20 additional minutes of scenes, and I can only imagine that it is R-rated because of the intense tutorial scenes that we're going to get. I didn't know that, that's where things went with that. Now, no one knows why this needs to be an R-rated extended edition. I believe that some people think that maybe some of the battle scenes are going to get more intense, and that might have something to do with it. But considering that the extended editions of the Lord of the Rings films got fairly intense and they didn't feel the need to throw an R rating on them, as far as I recall, it just seems a little odd. What possibly could they be throwing into this film that would need an R rating?
Well, as a side note, this is the last sort of film of the extended series, so I guess they're pulling out all the stops for the last, you know, for the last one. I'm thinking violence too, but we'll have to see, I suppose.
See, now you mentioned naked dwarves, and I can only think of the story yes. that could be. So thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Let's see. That is okay.
But no, I was just going to toss in my two cents saying that I think it's got to be violence as well. But given how much latitude they're given on violence nowadays, it does kind of make me wonder. Like, okay, just how bad is it?
Exactly. It better, you know, there was so much about the theatrical version of the film that didn't quite come together for a lot of us that mm-hmm. I'm really hoping that this isn't yet another promise that they throw out that they can't quite live up to, because, hey, if you're going to have an R rating now, you better have something worth one. That's all I can say. That's it for our actual movie news. And now we move into our casting news. Okay. And Gary, you can get us started off here with some news about the Gambit film impending.
Yes. Contrary to my several episodes ago where we said the movie was being canceled, it's still going on with full force. Not only is it continuing, but they've now cast the female lead with Variety reporting that French actress Lea Seydo from Spectre, as well as Mission Impossible, Ghost Protocol, and Inglourious Basterds, is in early negotiations for the role, and it looks quite promising. She will be playing the character named Bella, who's the head of the Assassin's Guild that Gambit originally comes from before he goes to the X-Men. So it's supposed to start filming in October, so relatively shortly in film time, and with the script written by Josh Zamuder from the RoboCop reboot. Channing Tatum is playing the title role and is helped producing it, so it's still full steam ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems so. If they're starting to flesh out the cast the way that they are, there's a lot of promise there that they're actually pulling or following through with this now, and all of the questions about its future are resolved, or so it would seem. That's, I guess, you know, the way certainly looks. All right, and Edmund, I believe that there is some news regarding The Flash.
We have they are letting us know that The Flash is adding a little girl power to its expanding company of speedsters. For once, apparently this is apparently a true newcomer. Violet Bean has been cast to join The Flash as Jessie Quick. Appearing in multiple episodes and characterized as a brilliant but quirky college student who gets caught up in the battle between the Flash and season two big bad, who is not yet cast, Zoom. They have a DC wiki entry here, but I am sure that Gary could bring us up to speed on who Jesse Quick is.
Yes, I'll be glad to, and I'll try and do it a little bit more. I'll try and sum it up rather quickly. Although it ties into the Golden Age Flash, so I'm sort of surprised we're hearing more about her before we do about him. But perhaps one will lead to the other, or vice versa. Jessie Quick, otherwise known as Jessie Chambers, is the daughter of two Golden Age World War II superheroes. The first one was Johnny Quick, who got his speed powers by reciting a formula which sounds an awful lot like the quadratic equation, but they loved to put it in comic books back in the day and would actually write out the whole thing for him to say it to start going fast. And then her mother was a Liberty Bell, who had a piece of the original Liberty Bell, and anytime either the bell would ring or she would ring her piece, she would gain a bit of super strength and invulnerability to fight against the forces of evil. Later on, she did take her mother's name as Liberty Bell, but that never stuck around that long. They never seemed to know what to do with the character. Eventually, she did go on to take her father's title, as Jessie Quick, and used his mathematical formula to get her speed power. So it's a very different origin than Barry's, or at least it's been presented that way so far. So I'm not sure how exactly it's going to be linked through the Speed Force or any other thing along the way. So it'll be interesting, but it definitely ties into the Golden Age Flash helmet that we saw the peak of during the finale episodes earlier this season. So I'm curious how it's going to link.
Yeah, they're really introducing quite a bit, it seems, here, and it's all coming out of that finale and that array, as you said, of flashes of other flashes or other speedsters, whatever the case may be. So, it looks like that was more of a mission statement than even we realized at the time, and I kind of like that.
And I'd like to just point out, a lot of people might not realize it, but The Flash has a very detailed history of not only speedsters, but different family connections, as well as his extensive villain collection. In some ways, it does rival and at times exceed even Batman's cast of characters. So, there is quite a wealth of history for them to draw on for the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And it seems like we've gotten to the end of a news segment here without, please, if anyone is going to correct me, go right ahead. I think we've got through another week without a major celebrity death.
Hooray!
Apparently, yes.
I'm glad everyone is living long and prospering, yes.
Yes. That's good news. And in fact, we're going to go into our mid-show break on that news. And when we come back, we're going to go ahead and get started on our episodic discussion. So stay tuned. Thank you. All right, and we are going to go ahead, as I said, and get started with our episodic discussion. But first, hey, because we forget to do this sometimes, Edmund, the disclaimer for this portion of the week.
Oh, well, I thought I kind of threw it in at the end of the beginning, but just to reiterate...
Let's just make sure.
Okay. when we talk about anything in the episodes, we just might discuss anything that happened, so you will be spoiled if you haven't seen them. But it was a week ago. You really should have caught up.
That's right. And honestly, that is to make up for the fact that we didn't give any warning last time when we started with episodic discussion early. So there you are. All right. Well, we are going to go ahead with the bottom shows of the week. And this was a brutal week. The spread this time was bigger than we've had in a long time. We have an episode that was all the way up at 9.5 at the top, and we go all the way down to a 5.5 average at the bottom. So, yeah, we've got all three of our shows here in the bottom three are six or below, so definitely below average, and that means it's been a rough week. And we've got a surprise in this particular range here, which is probably going to take a little bit of our time. But before we do that, we have Falling Skies, Season 5, Episode 9, Reunion. Tom gains a powerful new weapon against the Ashveni. Meanwhile, Ben risks his life to snatch enemy plans. Pope launches a final attack, and an unforeseen visitor appears, causing the Second Mass to reevaluate their situation. Yes, and we all gave this one a 6. And, yeah, we here in the household were shouting, "Kill him, Pope!" So, I guess you could say we're a little bit ready for Tom and them to get what they have coming to them, or just get off our screens already.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, especially since he was once again demonstrating his fabulous military prowess at having to decide, should I use this thing that a stranger just gave me or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Gary, how about you? Your thoughts on this one? It sounds that obviously from the score, you don't have much different opinions of it.
Actually, I like this episode more than my 6 score would let on. But the handling and disposition of Pope just really took me from left field. It was such minute importance in the episode after all we've been through with the character. I was just shocked that they ended things so cleanly and without really further discussion afterwards, that it really took major points away from me for this episode. If they had handled that better, I probably would have been somewhere around, you know, 7.5 to 8, but that just, it really drew it down that we've had this, in a sense, regular character that's turned against everyone, and he was pretty much killed in about 38 seconds and then never mentioned really again.
Yeah, they set it all up for episodes earlier this season, and then just that's how they chose to deal with it. That was the crux of my problem. It's just like they were ticking off the boxes of the things they needed to resolve in the last couple episodes, and that just happened to be an inconvenient one.
Yeah, and even though there was part of me that was thinking, it's like, oh, come on, guys, are you going comic book death? You're not showing the body, so he's going to pop up in the finale, and it's like, either way, even if that's what they're setting up, it's poorly done. So.
Yeah, not a pleasant episode, or penultimate episode anyway, not a pleasant plot point in the penultimate episode to leave the fans remaining watching the show with a good taste in their mouth. That would have been the right thing to do, but I gotta say, these last few episodes have just not been winners for me. I know that this season has been doing better overall, but it still isn't doing that great, obviously, and the last few episodes are really struggling to get any type of momentum. And considering there's only one episode left, yeah, it's just kind of marking time right now for me. It's unfortunate, but there we are. All right, and this next one it's a little surprising to see where it is here on the list, but there we are. Fear the Walking Dead, Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot. In the opener of this Walking Dead spinoff, a dysfunctional blended family is forced together when they realize a reported virus is actually the start of the zombie apocalypse. Really? Because that's not what it seemed like happened to me, as far as I'm concerned. This came in at an average of 5.75, but I'll be honest, it was saved from a much worse fate by Nadim's 8. He came along and said, while it may move at a pace that's far too leisurely, this is an effective debut with hints of fascinating potential. Everyone else gave it something that was far less than 8. So, yes, this would have been definitely the bottom show if it hadn't been for Nadim's higher score. And, boy, Look, they said early on that this was going to be a show that got a little bit of a slow start. Anyone who reviewed it said basically, hey, you know, you're going to have to be patient with it. But then they went and extended it to 90 minutes, and I think they just made an already plodding start worse.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is now the latest example, and I'm realizing actually it was, of course, the Walking Dead season finale, which kind of started this recently, of episodes that have been expanded to 90 minutes that absolutely did not need it, and if anything, could have benefited by being much tighter in their plotting, because certainly that description of the family coming together, it's like, no, the pilot to me basically ended with all of them still spinning out of control, so... I think in a way it also kind of it suffered a little bit from the very success of its parent show, because in the beginning of the pilot, the way they're trying to set it up, where, oh, you think they're in the middle of the apocalypse, and then lo and behold, it's the big reveal they're in downtown Los Angeles, and there's been so much publicity leading up to this that I think that's a gotcha effect that has very little chance of working.
Gary, let loose. You were at the bottom with a 4.5.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to be nice. I have to admit, I started to watch this show and I said to myself, geez, this isn't a really good movie for Lifetime. And then I looked at it, was AMC. And so I said to myself, I said, okay, well, I'm sure they'll get into something. Maybe even like some, you know, a news report or something will pop up or something like that. Instead, we got lots of character building. Boy, did we get character building. Except we really didn't get that much character building. We got character building on three people for the most part. And for a show that's going to, from what I'm told, have a larger sort of group of people, I wanted to see more people. I'm not sure if I was looking for sort of a Sense8 where we see 10 minutes of each person. But you know, to basically focus, I'd say about the first 70 minutes worth of the show on this family dealing with this guy's with their kid's drug addiction, stretch things a little too far. I mean, I know Hollywood likes to obsess about these type of stories, and that's what I feel happened. They launched, oh yeah, let's go into this more and more and more, so people get connected to the characters. But you know, people did not line up to watch this, at least for me, to necessarily sit down and get a whole character piece in the pilot. You know, people want to have the world set up a little bit better, you know, have sort of scope things out, not just drill down into three characters. And it left me cold. And while they, you know, there were teases and hints here and there, and definitely at the very end in the plus 70 minute mark, the show started to pick up a little bit. They really lost me as a viewer after about the first hour, when it was really a family drama and not a bit of a horror picture for me.
Yeah, it's, you know, and that's kind of the thing, is that if I don't necessarily mind if this was a family drama or at least character driven start, if it wasn't for the fact that the characters at this point just are so bland, there's really not a lot of reason for me to care about these people. The one character, I think his name, it's Nick, the drug addict.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is at least interesting to watch, but it's hard to sympathize with him right now. And he's the only one that's actually, you know, showing any degree of life. Everybody else seems to just be stuck in a rut. And now that may be part of the point. And I'm okay with that idea. But right now, I'm not really interested in seeing how the people, you know, down the street learned how to survive in the zombie apocalypse. I'm actually kind of waiting to see how they all die. So they need to give me a reason to actually want to see them survive. And right now, I really don't see that. I just see people just kind of that are about to be eaten by zombies because they just are so dense. I mean, I know they're trying to come up with some kind of thematic thing here, and maybe that's something to explore. But is it me, or are these people just not interesting?
The mother especially was almost painful to watch her act, and I really almost want to put it on the actress more so than the script. I don't think her role necessarily was that horrible. Just the acting really did not work for me in the least. So that was very difficult getting through that for me. The father was a little better, but given how much focus was on the mother, it was really painful for me. Like you said, the Nick, the whole story just seems sort of stereotypical for me. You know, it was like a standard drug addict kid plot where, you know, the mother's upset and the father's running out trying to, you know, find the kid or, you know, do stuff. I've seen that plot line so many times before that they really should need to give credit to somebody for it than the actual writers of the pilot. You're right. It just didn't feel like it went anywhere till about minute 80. And, you know, where you're starting to have sort of confusion over what's going on and stuff like that. Society's not broken down by this point yet, but there's, you know, there's sort of concern and people are sort of scratching their heads. And I really wish they'd sort of opened there, you know, than doing something than where they started. So that's just me, though. Edmund, what do you think? Did you like this? What they're calling a slow start to this?
Yeah, I mean the more we're discussing it, I mean I think that this whole decision to put this family drama at the center really doesn't make sense to me. And I mean, it's one of those classic cases where when we can start discussing it and I automatically can start doing rewrites in my head, that's always the bad sign. And what you were mentioning just now in terms of wanting to hear news reports in the background and the fact that they've introduced there is sort of this undercurrent of, you know, at the moment just more like conspiracy theory level warnings about what's going on. I mean, rather than having this stereotypical drug addict drama, you know, have one of the kids be on the internet all the time and finding these reports and, you know, and the parents knocking it back and saying, you know, oh, no, you know, and, you know, there are other ways of building up this tension rather than...
Oh, that would have been good.
Yeah, rather than just tossing us into, you know, as the moment you said, Gary, you know, no, that you thought you'd watch some Lifetime movie, I was like, yes, I think if you just put your finger right on one of the big problems.
Yeah, it really is, and they're going to have to get away from that quickly, because we talked about it earlier in the episode, right? The ratings are really stellar right now, but what is it going to be in 2 weeks if this is what the show is like? Because I can't, I'm trying to think of, did I really get any type of, other than Nadim's comment, which was kind of really thinking of the potential of the series more than what was actually shown.
Yeah.
I can't really think of too many people that were praising this, other than just the people who were maybe, you know, being slightly Pollyanna-ish about it because they want it to succeed. Guess what, guys? It's coming for a second season. AMC's not going to let this franchise go.
No.
Don't worry about that part. What I'm worried about is, are people even going to want to see it? Or is this going to be one of those things where it's just on the air just because, and it becomes almost like an albatross around the entire franchise? It even comes down to the fact that I think so many people during the show, the buzz was so negative, just so negative. I mean, you know, Facebook, Twitter, everything. I mean, it was hard to really get a sense of, you know, it was the exact opposite of what happens when you're watching like a season premiere or season finale of The Walking Dead, where everybody is like waiting on pins and needles to see what horrible thing is going to happen next. And they love it. This was just piling on after a while. And it's going to be very hard to have enthusiasm for a second season if it gets through the first season. And that's still the sentiment that's out there because it's just going to grow.
Now, John, sometimes in pilots, with pilots and shows, there's a gap between the pilot and the following episodes. Do you remember if they said like this was shot all the way through?
I really don't remember.
I wasn't sure if, you know, yeah, there'd be a chance. Sometimes they'll really shake things up between pilot and first official episode, so I wasn't sure whether we might get lucky.
Yeah, we might. We might. I did hear that, you know, the next couple episodes are supposed to be stronger. This was a pilot. It had to introduce characters that ostensibly are going to change over time, and we're going to hopefully see them change. I'm not, you know... giving up on the hope that this is just one of those situations where they want you to see people again be more mundane and then have to really radically change their ways in order to accomplish anything or to survive. But I also feel like they were almost beating you over the head with this theme that, you know, hey, we're in the apocalypse and, you know, these people are struggling through things and it's the verge of the apocalypse because we know how fast this all falls apart and it's supposed to be some kind of commentary on the general fear of you know, society that we're on the verge or something like that. If that's what they're going for, it didn't work, at least for me. But I still gave it a 5.5. It's not horribly bad for a pilot. But yeah, for 90 minutes, they could have cut that down to an hour with no problem at all. All right, and as I said, that came in at an average of 5.75, so below average, but it still beat out this last episode that's at the bottom of our list. And Edmund, if you could go ahead and do the honors.
Absolutely. Once again, it was my privilege, burden, etc., to catch Masters of Sex this week, Season 3, Episode 7, Monkey Business. Masters and Johnson are interviewed when they take on an exotic new patient. Yes, yeah, so after it's seeming like the season might be improving, they just managed to hit a whole new nadir with their exotic new patient, who is in fact a gorilla at the zoo. just the whole plot line, the investigation of the former keeper who happened to be female, and so, you know, yes, we're sort of having feelings for the gorilla, and it was all just rather crudely done, led up to this absolutely absurd scene where Virginia Johnson winds up flashing the gorilla. And there was an online comment that somebody made in relation to this episode. And of course, in context, we don't know if this would actually be correct, but they were really thinking that maybe for the 21st century, we could retire jumping the shark and just replace it with flashing the gorilla. We don't know yet if, in fact, this is the sign that Masters of Sex has irrevocably run off the rails. It might be pretty close, since later in the same episode, Josh Charles demonstrated to us that even he cannot act his way past being forced to act in a monkey suit, as he was at the end of the episode.
Oh, man. Yeah, that just sounds
I have to at least mention it, but I have to do it. I have to do it in the least amount possible. I had been hoping they would bring some of the side characters more into the storylines, and they're trying to do it now, and they're doing that really badly as well. So, definitely, less said about that, the better.
Mm. Boy, yeah, you know, I think that, wow, that just is disappointing. But we're just going to have to cleanse our palate of that, I think. And I think the best way for us to do that is to go ahead and end our episode here. And when we come back next time, we're going to go into the top three of the week and the rest of the content, and then see what kind of feedback we get after that. So until next time.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under the Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time. Watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.